general government. We're discussing Senate Bill 5522, the budget for the legislative agencies, the first topic on the agenda this morning is the budget for the Legislative Fiscal Office, and Scirocco is here to guide us through that. And do you have any preliminaries before?
No. Okay. Whatever he says, I'm sure. Is
whatever he says is probably what you were going to say anyway.
I'm sure.
All right. Very good. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning.
Go ahead. Good morning, Ken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ken Rocco, Legislative Fiscal Office. We're here to talk briefly about the Legislative Fiscal Office budget. As you probably are aware, LFO is a nonpartisan professional staff office that serves the legislative branch in areas of budget and fiscal impact work, performance evaluations, and we review IT projects in the interim and during session. The office was created in the late 1950s along with passage of by the voters of the Emergency Board constitutional amendments and statutes. So the office has been around for a while. Our mission, our mission is to promote state fiscal accountability. In the interim, we worked on a business plan I think we shared with you earlier this session, and we're going to refine that in the upcoming interim. Basically, what the office does is we analyze and make recommendations on the budget and agency performance measures during session, which you've seen some of our work before your committee this session. In the interim, we staff the emergency board. We also, during session, prepare fiscal impact statements, which are provided to substantive committees in the during the legislative process. As I mentioned, we do reviews and performance audits of selected programs during the interim for the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. And we also support the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology. Some of the products we prepare that I'm sure you're familiar with, we analyze and produce a publication on the governor's recommended budget, and then after session we produce the same type document for the legislatively adopted budget that has a fair amount of detail in it that helps people get a better understanding of what's in the budget and what decisions the legislature made. And then generally, we're just available to help the legislature adopt the balanced budget and do whatever we can to help that. As a small office, we have 19 staff people, 17 analysts, and an office manager and another support position. During session, we add about four positions usually. Committee assistants that help in each of the subcommittees, and then a scheduler in our office. And those are paid out of the Legislative Administration Committee budget. Some of the major issues we're facing is the ability to retain high-quality staff. I think the two areas there are salaries and working conditions. We sometimes during session we have to put in the hours required to get the job done, and that occasionally calls for some long hours on staff people to get the material done that you need to make decisions on budgets. On the salary side, we try to be competitive with the executive branch because our staff are always being recruited because of their knowledge of the process and their expertise in agency budgets. We know they're being recruited by the executive branch, so we like to be competitive with that because I think we we know the value of having long-term employees that have a lot of knowledge built up on agency budgets, and so we try to retain people as long as we can.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
Is it ever possible, Mr. Rocco, that you would take raiding parties to the executive branch?
We would never do that, Senator Johnson.
Thank you for that reassurance.
but when disillusioned executive branch employees
Mr. Chair, we welcome
it is an act of charity.
We welcome any qualified person to come and work for us. Another issue is that we're looking into right now, in fact, is our capacity to provide analysis on technical issues, primarily in the information technology arena. As I mentioned, we staffed the IMT committee during interim, and we found that our staff are very knowledgeable about budget items and agency executions of budgets, but when it gets into IT projects, we're somewhat behind the curve in some areas. So we're looking right now. excuse me, I've had some kind of an illness lately, and I'm still recovering. We're looking at an IT specialist type position. We have somebody on temporary contract trying to figure out the exact needs that we would have for this position, and we're trying to get a recommendation to you later in this session about that. Thank you. So we will get back to you on that opportunity. Another issue is that we're looking at right now is the effect that the legislative branch process changes may have on our office. And this would be the retimed session proposal right now. We're trying to be responsive to this, the June 29th date, which has caused us to, I think, expedite budgets more than we've had done in the last couple sessions. So if you look at where we are now versus where we were in the last two sessions, we're way ahead on getting budgets passed and through the process. As far as the February session goes, we're at this point we're going to try to deal with that with existing staff levels, because we, as you know, have gone through so-called special sessions before, and we're able to deal with that. The one concern we have is how much time that will take away from our normal interim job of monitoring the execution of agency budgets in the executive branch. And so what we want to do is take a look at how that February session will detract from our ability to monitor how agencies are actually implementing the decisions that you have made.
Mr. Rocco, one of the questions that's come up periodically, and you just happened to trigger my thinking on it when you said monitoring the execution of agency budgets, and that's the question of whether or not there ought to be an audit function embedded in legislative fiscal. And I don't know if you have a comment or a reaction. I'm not asking a loaded question. I'm really, because I don't know the answer, and I'm interested in your opinion about whether or not that would be useful as a function within LFO.
Senator Johnson, Mr. Chair, actually, you know, we do a few audits now, basically performance audits or program evaluations of specific areas that the legislature may be interested in, and we do those for the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. And in this interim, we're also planning to do audits of performance measure data, which we feel is an area that hasn't been looked at. And if we're going to rely on performance measures as much as we seem to be for making decisions about where an agency should be headed, we feel it's important to make sure that data is accurate. So we plan to develop a process to have a team of people look in the interim, look at that data on a random basis just to see how accurate it is. As far as a full-blown audit office, we have felt in the past that it may not be a good idea to embed that within legislative fiscal, but to work closely with the office since the goals are slightly different. In our area, it's developing budgets and making sure agencies are responsive to it. I guess it depends on what kind of an audit office you're looking at. If it's a performance program evaluation type function, which I think you're almost stuck with because of the constitutional requirement that the Secretary of State do the financial audits, then I think it could, you know, we're just not sure if it should be inside or if such an office exists, if it should be parallel and work with us, sort of like how we work with legislative revenue now, very closely but independently.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So really what you'd be talking about is legislative revenue, legislative fiscal, and legislative audit in a parallel universe, not embedded.
Senator Johnson, Mr. Chair, that's one model. And we haven't done enough research to see if that's the preferred model or, I mean, some states have them all within one director and then have three functions underneath. I think we just need to do a little more research on that.
Thank you.
Senator Bates.
Just to follow up on that, Ken, I'm sorry I came late. I was on the LFO. You know, my sense is you're doing a bit of auditing now anyway. You have to in order to be able to do what you do. When we look at DHS budgets or higher ed budgets, and I talk to people doing the analysis, they make site visits, they've gone over, they've looked, they're seeing what's going on. So when they do their estimates, they've actually got a little bit of an audit authority or to a certain degree going on. It's not what I would call formal, but it's informal. But they have to have that information to make their estimates of what we need and don't need. And they make pretty strong recommendations about what they think are worthwhile programs. And we really depend on those eyes and ears for us, because as legislators, we don't go out and do that. You guys do it for us.
Oh, Senator Bates, Mr. Chair, that's exactly right, and that's what I was alluding to, that we do things for the audit committee on a formal basis, but you're right, we also do informal reviews, and if we see something that needs to be looked at, we feel we have the authority to keep digging and looking at it. And that's one of our concerns about how much time will be spent in the February session because of that taking away from that monitoring activity that we normally do in the interim, that's the time we have to go out to the field and look at how agencies are doing in the field, in their home offices and things like that. So,
Chair, follow up,
then Senator Rich.
I'm going to ask the same question we've asked LC and we're asking other people too, or at least I'm asking. That's sort of a step back, big picture look at things. Our state's becoming more complex. It's becoming a lot bigger. It's becoming bigger faster. The budgets are growing, as they should, frankly. And I'm concerned that LC, LFO, revenue are being shortchanged as far as their ability to get things done. You don't ramp up a lot of people when we're in session, when their demands are incredibly high. People working nights and weekends leads to burnout, mistakes, and other things. And then the interim has always been a time of, for 18 months or so, you do your field work, have a chance to catch your breath, line up for the next session. You're going to lose that time, it looks like. You may be losing it on a permanent basis. So with that kind of a background going on, it raises questions in our mind about, one, is your facility you're working in big enough? Two, you need more people to get this job done now, not just, you know, continuing service levels or whatever the latest epithet for that is, but you really need to change what you're doing. You're going to do more personnel who can take care of the load during sessions, which will probably now become annual, and they probably should become annual, plus have time doing the field work and audit work to be done so you can make good recommendations to the legislative assembly.
Senator Bates, Mr. Chair, actually that's why we're taking a look-and-see approach to this February session, just to find out exactly what it will require us to do. And whether we do need more staff or not. And as I'm sure you're aware, we're fairly, the nature of the office is to be conservative in adding state positions. So it's hard in some cases to just say, well, we need to add a bunch of staff to LFO. When we're telling other agencies, I mean, we're always critically looking upon them adding staff. So that's why we want to really go through one of these to see and then evaluate afterwards whether or not it's going to require additional staff in our office. I think during session we do see probably a need to add some fiscal impact assistance because with this, and this is again something that's just happened new. It was with the cutoff on April 20th of requesting fiscal impacts. We had an incredible bulge in the number of bills being requested for work session, and it got close to overwhelming our office to take care of that load. So that's something that we will definitely be looking at in the future. And as far as space goes, we are just about maxed out right now with our 19 FTE. We have no additional space to build to add staff within our current configuration. So that, I think that's something that's being considered in the wings remodel. Any possibility that we would add staff.
Thank you. Thanks for answering.
Senator Whitson. Rocco, Oregon is about seventh in the nation in spending per capita, yet we seem to be perpetually out of money, unable to provide services. The fiscal office's mission is to promote state fiscal accountability. There was an article in the Oregonian a few months back indicating that the Department of Human Services in Oregon has twice as many, more than twice as many employees per capita as the average of the Department of Human Services or of the other 49 states. I had staff look into that and looked at it from a different angle and came up with about the same figures, so it's probably in the ballpark. ODOT has well more than twice as many employees as the state of Nevada does. And the state of Nevada is a little larger state population-wise, a little larger in square miles. Arguably, it may have fewer roads. I don't know. I haven't looked at, got that far into it. But I'm wondering, is your office currently capable of looking into those apparent inequities and making recommendations? Would you need more staff to do that? Is that something that that you feel that your agency should be doing?
Senator, what's up, Mr. Chair? I think on an isolated basis, we could look into that. For example, we could do some work on ODOT in a given interim, but these are interim projects for us because during session we are not capable of spending any time. And I think to do more than just one or two in interim, then I think we would either need to have additional staff or do some contract work with people and oversee a audit through our office. And I think those are valid questions to look into. A lot of times in our goal to promote state fiscal accountability, a lot of times we make recommendations that are not accepted by the body. And so we may be recommending a more fiscally constrained spending pattern than the body as a whole is willing to support. And so we're not totally able to be in charge of that fiscal accountability. It's to your question about our per capita spending.
I guess I understand your constraint. You're not in control of it. But that is information that I think that the body should have. And in my short time here, it seems to me that we are short of information a lot of times in making our decisions. We make, if we ran a business the way that we ran this government, we would have a problem. And that is primarily not being able to have the information to make a decision and then to critically look at that information and make a decision based on it. I'm looking at ways to find better information, more in-depth information about we sometimes spend a great deal of time deciding on how we're going to spend $100,000 and look at and fail to look at how we're spending billions.
You're absolutely correct, Senator, and I think that is an area that we could put some more effort into in the interim. And I think Teresa and I have talked about getting together some kind of a factual book about those kinds of things, spending in different program areas, comparators with other states in the region and the nation as a whole. And that's one of the things we've been thinking about doing in the next interim, trying to get something together like that. Because we do know other states have produced little brief fact books like that, which I think are very helpful in giving people a quick look at the overall budget. And then if you see something that looks questionable, then you can dig into it further. So I think we're going to try to look into doing something like that in the interim, and we'd be glad to talk to you about what your interests are.
Well, from my perspective, that's good news. Thank you.
Sure.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think in some respects, what Senator Whitsitt was just bringing up, and Ken, I don't know if you would agree with this or not, but I think sort of brings up one of the reasons why we need a legislative audits office. There's been bills in the last couple of sessions, this one included, to actually create a legislative audits office that I think would then be able to work with fiscal to get us the kind of information that we're looking at, because I think, from the perspective of the fiscal office, to try to perform the audit functions while also trying to do all of the other things that are required of them by us in terms of the information that they give us, it becomes very it would be a tough task. I guess Ken, would you agree with that with that assessment that an audits office would then be very helpful to you in terms of looking at what some of the other states are doing and how we compare and making recommendations? I realize that as a body we may not always follow the recommendations you make, but
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, I think audits are very useful and really help focus your attention on where things need to be, where things are being done well and where you need improvement. So I think the more you do in audits, the better. So I think it would help us to have some kind of a function like that. As I said, we try to do as many as we can, and when we see something that is an apparent issue, we go after it as to our ability. We haven't had great relationships with the Secretary of State's Audits Division. They do contact us occasionally when they're about to embark on audits, but we found that there's often a disconnect between what we are looking for and what they actually end up doing. So I think that's another relationship that could be probably improved if that's where the audit function is going to reside. Again, I think many states have legislative audit functions. I think Oregon is probably one of the few that does not have a full-blown internal audit function.
I think, Mr. Chair, one of the arguments that he's raising that's extremely valid is that when the Secretary of State's office does audits, unless we put something specific in a bill, they are, number one is that the agency is the client, not the legislature. So we can't get advance information if we're trying to kind of see how things are going along the way. We can't get that. And I think that that's one of the functions that an audit's office would really provide for us, is that we would then be the client, and we could be more directive from a standpoint of what type of information we're looking for. Just a thought.
Mr. Chair, the last two major issues I wanted to mention are both related to what we've just been talking about, and one of those is the accuracy and objectivity of executive branch information. And as I mentioned, we have 17 analysts. We're widely outnumbered by the executive branch and our ability to match up with them. The governor, of course, can rely on or call upon all of state agency people in the executive branch, which number in the tens of thousands. And your ability to rely on those people is hampered by branch issues, although they, are responsive to requests for information. But I think that's one of the challenges that we face, is that we're outnumbered, but we try to do our best to get the accurate information that you need to make decisions. And then finally, we are also responsible to monitor non-executive branch agencies and a couple of executive branch agencies that to ensure fiscal accountability that don't get reviewed by the executive branch. For example, the judicial branch has no oversight provided by the executive branch whatsoever because of the branch issues. And with the passage of Senate Bill 66 this session, that will also apply to the Treasurer's Office and the Secretary of State's Office, because they will no longer be under budgetary oversight of the executive branch, and they're also excluded from the personnel rules of the executive branch. So we feel it's our responsibility, given that lack of executive branch oversight, that we provide that oversight to ensure that they're adhering to state policy and rules. And then finally, we have attached, I believe you have the prioritized list of programs and services and a continuous improvement concepts that we're looking at. In terms of performance measures, we're proposing to eliminate three. The fiscal impact statements issued, which is just a workload measure. Timeliness of fiscal impact statements, which is often outside of our control. And then we had this measure of the governing magazine's ranking of Oregon's performance, which is it's a high-level measure, and it's not something that we have any control over, and it's not directly related to our work or mission. And basically, the budget we've presented to you is an essential budget level budget, maintaining existing services. But we are looking at, along with the other agencies within the branch, we're looking at the potential of adding staff if necessary and to the budget, and including that information technology specialist position I mentioned. Perhaps some kind of a salary adjustment package, I think will be talked about with you later. And Mr. Chair, that's all I had for you today.
Questions? Senator Bates.
A couple questions real quick. One of them you're not going to probably be able to answer, but we've had other agencies that work with us and help us oversee this operation here called the state legislature. A little bit of a meltdown, lose about a third to a half of their employees suddenly because of working conditions and wages, although we've been told it's not because of that, it's because of individual reasons for leaving. I don't know if I buy that necessarily. I think they're being kind and polite to us. Do you see your organization being any risk at that right now? I mean, I know who's down there. I know the people. They're hardworking. They have a wealth of experience that we would be lost without. I worry about them being hired away to other parts of government or leaving government service altogether. Do you have any concerns about that, about your agency this time?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, after last session, months following last session, we lost three people, two with long-time experience in the office. All three of whom went to executive branch agencies. And as I mentioned earlier, that one of our concerns is that our staff, because of their expertise and knowledge, are always being recruited by executive branch. And normally at a relatively high level within the agency, like a assistant director or deputy director level at least. So it is a concern to us. And I think given the fact that, I mean, we try to have a good team atmosphere in the office, and I think we have fairly good morale, and people don't like leaving, and they're not anxious to leave in a lot of cases, but I think given where most of these professional staff are in their careers, I think the salary issue is something that I think needs to be looked at. We try to maintain a certain level in comparison to the executive branch so that isn't the reason why somebody leaves. It's purely not a salary issue. If they're tired of the extra hours and that kind of thing, that's a different story. But we try to at least keep at a level on the salary side. And I think we've slipped over the past several years because of the way the executive branch salaries are managed. So I think that's an area that we need to look at a little bit.
Chair,
follow it.
You mentioned, I think, earlier that you're going to be looking at salaries more before we're through this session, that the package in front of us isn't the final package for LFO.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, that's correct. I think it's something that's being done for all of the offices in the branch. An overall salary, a package to go along with the salary pot that is already currently in the budget, which does include some suggestions of a management-type component to that salary pot.
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm real concerned about this, not only for LFO, but for revenue and LC, too. We've talked about it for LC before. I've worked for Boeing Corporation, and I have kind of a varied background before I went into medicine. And as an example, in Boeing, you actually have two companies in Boeing. One is your quality control people, and the one is production. The other one's production and R&D, research and development. The lowest person in quality control trumps anybody in production, the other ones, and their salaries are commensurate to that because they have to maintain quality. Otherwise, planes go down and rockets don't go up. And it was a bright line. We're in a similar position for us here, that LC and LFO and revenue are our bright lines, and you're going to make sure the job gets done right. And I'm just very concerned, one, that we're going to continue to lose people, and what we've got will be eroding. And two, I'm very concerned you don't have enough personnel to get the job done. I really am concerned about that, especially with the changes that are occurring. We can wait until you melt down and lose half your people one session or just before session or February 15th. Or we can start taking steps now, and I'm just really asking you to take steps now and start looking at this. You're talking about audits, you're talking about things that need to be done to change this. I didn't hear any discussion of what private business does. DHS right now is looking at a new program for what we call value-added, for leaning out what they do. And that's more than an audit. That is actually taking steps that private business does in order to make an organization more effective and get more value from what you're doing. And moreover, again, it came from Aerotech, and Lockheed Martin uses this, and other big companies do also. And I don't know if you're aware of that program going on in DHS right now, but that's the kind of program that you should have enough personnel to look at and say, this is something we think should be implemented across the board, or not. But I don't think you have the time or the people to look at that kind of a program, which could really change state government. And so I'm just worried about them being undergunned. They've got a $5 million budget. We've got a $12 billion budget. DHS has over 9,000 employees. You know, I don't see how Mr. Britton can really sit there by himself, look at 9,000 employees all over the state doing some really tough work and finding out if we're really getting what we need to get out of DHS.
Senator Johnson, or Senator Bates, my arithmetic comes to something over $50 billion budget.
If you include matched money and money going flowing to county, just I'm talking about stuff we have our direct hands on.
I think all of that passes through, let's say, fiscal office, even though we tend to use it as play money sometimes.
I think you get my point here.
Oh yes, very well. I really appreciate your point. That's
very undergunned. Very concerned.
If I can, Senator, I'd like to follow a little bit on your point. The thing that's been concerning to me is how this, and I heard you, Rocco, I think mention this. How this change to a annualized or to a February session has speeded up the process, somewhat for you, and I'm concerned with, given the resources that you have at the present time, what kind of an effect this is having, and nothing at all disparaging meant by it, but I'm concerned about the quality control when you're asked to do a job in a day or two that should take you a week or two. What it is that we may be, and if you have any sense or feeling about that at this point, realizing that you may not have specifics, but gut feelings sometimes are worth considering or talking about.
Well, Mr. Chair, right now we're using the, I don't know if I should probably say this or not, but we're using the February session as a, like a safety valve. Like if we do something, we make a mistake now because of timing and the fact that we have to rush things through to get things done on time, that we can perhaps fix it at that point in time, because normally in past biennia, we would have had to wait until a special session occurred or call a special session just to fix something. And that's not to say that we are being sloppy or but we're seeing that as a potential area of a time to fix things if something does go awry. So it really, I can't say it enough that we're seeing this as an experiment. It's been described to us as a pilot or as an experiment, and we're just basically wanting to go through one cycle to see how we can deal with it, and then evaluate afterwards what changes we need to make, and whether it's more staff during session, whether it's more permanent staff all the way around, whether it's more budget analysts, more fiscal analysts, more support staff. I mean, our support staff are, a lot of people don't recognize this, but we really only have two support staff to get all the budget reports done and distributed to you, and it sometimes becomes a real burden on them to process all that paper that we're trying to move. So we will evaluate after February to see how much time it's taken away from our normal interim activities. And the other question we have is, whether the Ways and Means Committee is going to meet during the interim and up to February, and that's our understanding that it will, and so we have to evaluate how that will be different than the emergency board meeting and whether that requires any different staffing patterns. So we're just sitting back, not passively, but we're trying to see exactly where this is going and how we can deal with it. If we can deal with it with existing staff, we're happy to do that. But we have a feeling that it may need to some tweaks in our staffing patterns.
I think perhaps as long as some of us who are here are still in the legislature, we're going to be very sensitive to this issue and to ensuring that you have both the staffing and the quality of staffing that you're But I'm interested especially in this, members, because of you know, my observations of what's taking place with one of our other key agencies that we have to deal with as legislators, where we've had considerable what I would call confusion. And admittedly, in that particular agency, they've got a whole bunch of new people. And while you have some turnover, last time, you still have a pretty solid core. So I think we're looking at here an agency that is A, well managed with a good team surrounding the management on it. And in the other case, we're looking at an agency that's brand new, hitting the ground and then accelerating the process over what it has been before. And some of us are yours truly included in that, have been making evaluation judgments on that particular agency based on this. So this is one of the dealing here with, let's say, fiscal is one of the opportunities to do some compare and contrast as we look at what the effect of this accelerated process is and what additional, if any, resources we may need to put into the process when we get further down the road with it. So I appreciate your comments. I appreciate your testimony. I appreciate very much both Senator Bates, Senator Whitchett, and Representative Crummell's questions on this. And if there's a closing point or two someone would like to make, Senator Whitchett, I appreciate it, and we can move on then. Senator Bates, sir.
Thank you, Chair Jensen. Mr. Rocco, as an employee of the state, who do you answer to? I mean, who has authority to, ask for your resignation or... That's probably demonstrates my ignorance of the system.
Well, actually, Senator Whitson, it is a little confusing. During the session, I work directly for the co-chairs of the Ways and Means Committee. They are who technically appoint me during session. And then immediately after session is over, the way the statutes read, I then am appointed by the chairs of the emergency board, which happen to be the president and speaker. That's who I report to as the presiding officer. So.
Thank you.
I'll comment. I want to thank you and your department for what you do. You guys do a great job with what you have available to you. Reports you turn out. Your availability to us when there's 90 of us and so few of you and the pressure you're under, I appreciate that. I really do. I've been down here nights. I've seen people working weekends. The lights are on for 6 months, 24/7 almost. And towards the end of the session, it gets really hectic, and I appreciate what you're going through. I just don't want to see a repeat of what's happened to others that we work with. I don't want to see a burnout and a meltdown in your department. And I think it's a possibility. And just heads up on it and know that there's a lot of us who would support an increase in your department and an increased number of personnel, support personnel. We rely on you to give us the best possible information to make decisions on budgets. And to a certain degree, that's what this is all about. So thank you for your work.
Well, thank you for your comments, Senator. And I'd just like you all to know that the people in the office are dedicated to the legislative branch. That is, they believe in the legislative process and they believe in the branch, and that's who we try to support and work and make you all successful. That's part of our goal. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And appreciate your hard work, and we will move on. And what do we have next coming up, Grayson?
You have two other areas on the agenda. Legislative Administration, who is back to talk in further detail about the wings remodel. And then Legislative Assembly is also on here to follow up on any other kind of outstanding items left from the Public Commission or for the Assembly that they'd like to speak to as well.
I notice that we've got the Assembly last and the Administration next, but Senator Johnson has wanted to be with us when we get to the WINGS program, and she had another meeting, and I wonder if the folks from the Assembly are here that they can do a very quick run-through of their issues and agendas, or are they so happy with what we've done or going to do to them that they're afraid to take any further comments?
We'll give Gina a call and see.
Are you calling for help there? I understood that you were the person who really ran the whole show here, so on the other side of the building. So
The Senate does run everything, don't they?
What?
The Senate does run everything, don't they?
No, I didn't mean in that context. Oh. I'm talking about who ran the Senate.
Oh, gotcha. I mean,
the Senate doesn't have a lot of power, but we refer to her as she who must be obeyed. So I think that
okay.
kind of sums it up. Okay.
For the record, Chair Jensen, Connie Seeley, Chief of Staff to the Office of the Senate President, and oh, Senator Bates, how I wish my 3-year-old followed that dictate, she who must be obeyed. So, really, I'm here just to follow up if there are any additional questions about anything. I will take guidance from the committee, from your great and wonderful staff.
Mr. Chair,
what you'd like me to touch
on? One item that has not been touched on that is not a budget-related item in the sense of dollars being added, but was a kind of major item that's been discussed now for, what I can tell, several years, but was also an item before both the Senate Legislative Committee and the Public Commission, was relative to the reversion dates for the Assembly, which are different than the rest of state government and cause some management issues. And given that it would require an amendment to our bill, I did ask Connie and Gene if they would be willing to speak to that issue a little bit so
very
that
good.
The committee would understand what's going on there.
Kind of sorry about the curveball and timing.
I was watching, but then I was distracted, and then I heard her say she was going to call me, and I thought I'd give her permission.
I'm Gene Atkins, Chief of Staff, Speaker of the House.
Representative Jensen and committee, I think what Teresa's kind of touching on is unlike other agencies in state government, our budgets, in fact, your own personal budgets, are divided into two sections, a 6-month section for a session and an 18-month section for the interim. And it's been my experience now for a while that it kind of contributes to this kind of feast and famine situation. It appears we've got it creates a very tight session environment in terms of your budget, and frankly maybe a little more than we need in the interim. And so we've been exploring for many years, and certainly Teresa has been just wonderful in the last year of helping us work through how we can change that structure so that your leadership offices, your own offices, would have the ability to really manage a 2-year budget and give you some additional flexibility in how you use those dollars, and potentially, certainly not in your office budgets, but potentially in our office budgets, looking at, reversions historically, maybe capturing some savings, but yet really giving us some flexibility that we need. I don't know if I'm doing an accurate.
Yes, again, Jean Atkins from the Speaker's Office, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I've experienced this both from a minority office perspective and now from a Speaker's Office perspective. The budgets have made assumptions about staffing that are consistent across the 24 months of the biennium, but the staffing generally has not been consistent across the 24 months. Generally speaking, leadership offices do shrink back a little bit during the interim. The members are not as much in direct need of support during session. They may or may not be, but at any rate, they've been timely. We could talk about that if you want, Senator Bates. But at any rate, it has not been the case that people have used all of their resources during the interim and then have found themselves short of resources during the session as pressures come on for additional staffing. It's also, we experience, I think, the difficulty that members experience as well, as the day session ends may be the day of the end of a job. We don't necessarily, can't necessarily budget and assume that we can keep staff over the course of the whole 24-month period, depending on what's happening. It has seemed impressed, and leaders before us, I think, have acknowledged that that a more consistent way of budgeting those offices in order to have consistent leadership patterns and consistent support to members throughout, we should try to move to a 24-month month budget.
Question, Mr. Chair. Can any of you tell me how many of the legislative offices either use other funds to supplement their staff salaries or have relatives working for them, either one, either or?
I generally for the leadership offices, and when I'm just for the record, Connie Seeley, Office of the Senate President. And when I'm describing leadership offices, I'm describing the four caucus offices and then the offices of the presiding officers, just so, so I'm clear. Generally, in my, you know, roughly 10-year history, it is not uncommon for caucus offices to either shrink down or supplement with other funds. It isn't always consistent. I mean, it varies interim to interim. I don't know about presiding officers. We have not done that, but the presiding officers have a slightly different role. In terms of hiring family, certainly, you know, our office has an employee, and I'm reeling through my memory of various caucus offices, of various parties, and various presiding offices. It certainly happened. And then you might want to, in terms of the members, of all 90 members, I believe there is some data to that effect, either in Henderson's office or in potentially the commission might have compiled some historical data about hiring of family members. I couldn't speak to it right as I sit here, but I'm sure it exists somewhere.
Well, Mr. Chair,
follow up.
The reason I ask is, I mean, it really speaks to a problem. You know, water runs downhill, and that's the way it works. If we're looking at a situation where we're really not having enough staff during session and interim both, then people will find a way around that if they want to get the job done. And the way they get around that is they start supplementing salaries or hiring people outside of what is supplied by the legislature, and ends up using campaign funds, personal funds. I've done both, and I'm sure others have too. And it speaks to a real serious problem of conflicts of interest and all kinds of issues going on around those. Hiring of relatives also leads to the question of, are salaries appropriate for legislative members? And I believe that probably is the best way to judge that. When you find that your legislative assistant is making more than your legislator is by a substantial margin, that's how people balance out the cost of being here. I think we got a problem. And it's one we'll kind of look the other way on it and go wink, wink. And when I asked the question, I was hoping you'd say to me, there are 47 people with relatives working for them, and there are 78 using, other funds to support their offices. Maybe not. Maybe it's an outlier. But, you know, I would guess that when we're talking about the kind of reforms we're looking at, that's sort of a key question for me. It's kind of a key question because it really tells me what the real world is out there. Not, gee, it ought to be, gosh, it isn't fair. But what's really happening on the ground? And that's my two questions. How many people are hiring relatives? Probably because they have to. I can't imagine too many times anybody want, in my family, want to work for me, you know, for lots of reasons. But more importantly, how many salaries are being supported by other funds in this building? You know, I don't know. And I'd sure like to know, because that speaks to exactly what the problem, I think, is for the people dealing with. I don't know how often the clerk's got a wage increase. I don't know how often the secretary of the Senate's got a wage increase. I don't know where these people are anymore. You know, they got no wage increases for 10 or 15 years, 5 years. Are they getting an annual increase in their budgets and people working for them? I don't know any of that stuff. What's going on?
Senator, as to members, Connie may be right that the commission may have gathered some data around family hiring that we could try to look for with Teresa and provide to you. I'm not aware of surveys being done and actual data gathering around this. And one of the challenges around, I mean, I agree with you. It's absolutely the case. I would guess, without feeling any, you know, reluctance whatsoever, that at least half of the members of the House at some time or another have staff that are not just on their, you know, the state payroll, but are doing something else in some, whether it's a part-time job someplace else or whether it's something else that they're backfilling with campaign funds or some other sources to do that. I'm sure that's true. We've not surveyed members and asked them to, you know, to come up to the table and say, you know, this is how I've, you know, managed my staff in the last bit. If the committee wanted to do so, that might be more appropriate for members than for staff to suggest that we come and ask those questions, but it certainly would be somewhat revelatory. I point out there are, as Connie said, we have this situation of the caucus offices, we have the two presiding offices, we have the desks, and then we have members, and everybody's in a slightly different situation in terms of folks who work in the caucus offices are, except to the extent that they might be the personal legislative assistant of a member who also is there, are on a full-time state payroll, sign timesheets, have to do all of the things that a state employee does, or let's say fiscal, or those folks do. The same thing is true of the desks. They're, you know, permanent or part-time, but they have a set job with hours and so forth. Member staff are a little bit different, and I think the proposal that you're looking at to potentially broaden your ability to have full-time staff, leadership would suggest probably needs to remain to some degree in control of the member as it has been for all of you all this time to decide how much staff you want to buy with the money that you're given and so forth, although Public Commission has sort of brought up the issue of perhaps timesheets or other kinds of record keeping might be more appropriate now if you're going to get a little better salary piece. But the issue we're talking about in terms of evening out the 24 months of the biennium, that really is an issue of we've not been able to carry over funds from interim to session, and since expenses are a little lower during the interim, we've ended up having to revert numbers of funds. If they're spread out, we might have some general savings, or we might be able to give you better service during the session, and that's one little piece of this whole complicated salary pie.
Representative Crowell.
One of the other, to follow up on Senator Bates's comment here, one of the other situations that we run into, especially during the interim, is staff cobbling together, working for several members during the interim so that they can, in fact, make a living as opposed to going and getting a, you know, part-time job at McDonald's or Staples. To supplement their income. So I think that's another factor that we need to look at here in terms of how we pay not only in the interim but also during the session.
Just in terms of offering some feedback, I think the hope is that by smoothing out your budget, and let me give you an example of how I think it could possibly change how your offices are operating. And let me just say for the record, I've had the absolute privilege of working in the minority, working in the majority, working in the caucus office, working in the presiding office, and I think at this point I've seen this from multiple different places. I've worked in the House, I've worked in the Senate, and I'll pick on Senator Bates since I hope he will let me do that. But ideally, all members work in a different way, and some folks like to have one staff person at the same amount of money for 12 months or 24 months, and they just kind of make it work. Others really focus in on session, and you could, as if we move to this 24-month budget, you could decide, all right, it's now July, we're out of session. You know, I'm going away for 2 months. I'm not doing anything. I'm shutting my office down. I'm not doing anything. And then, gee, I got February coming. So, you know what? I want to bring a full-time person on. So I'm going to now figure out I've got X amount left, and now I can start building back toward February. Maybe bring that person down a little bit after February and bring them back up if you want to. But you're going to have, ideally, increased dollars, because what we're, at least in our office, advocating for is you all getting one full-time person throughout the 24-month calendar or cycle, if you will, and then adding on top of that the flexibility to manage that person up and down if you choose to, or maybe you don't. Maybe you just want to have someone at a full-time level for 24 months. But it's going to give you a lot more flexibility, it seems to me, instead of, you know, running around in November and December trying to find somebody, you know, whoever's left standing, you know, the L.A. shuffle that happens. really allow you to hire someone, ideally breed, if you will, bring up through the ranks some really great staff. I mean, we all know we've got some great LAs running around this building who I would love to find a way to really bring them along the path of, you know, developing background in policy and legislative operations, and we just have no ability to do that. So
If I may follow up, another factor that is thrown into this as well is the fact that the I know we're given a small allowance for supposedly an office in our district, and I don't know who in this body can afford to get an office space outside of their home for that measly amount. So I think, you know, in terms of looking at that, that's one of the things that we also need to look at in terms is the package from a standpoint of if there's going to be an allowance for an office, being able to actually get an office that's outside of our home, if that's something that we, and maybe that's not someplace that we want to go, but I think it's something to look at.
Okay. I think and appreciate, and I'm sorry for the curveball. I appreciate your coming up. I think Senator's issues of Senator Bates' issues of family and other funds are fairly real, and how we manage our budgets in the various offices. Probably a great deal of diversity with this. I know I get into a little bit of trouble because I have a half-time person who works time and a half and usually manage my budget by cutting her pay when we run out of money. And that goes over very well, sort of thing. So thank you very much, and we appreciate you being here. Call. Okay, the rules have changed.
We now have a call of the House representative.
And in which case we are, if Senator Johnson gets back here, we can proceed. But you can proceed with the wings anyway, Senator Bates. Senator Johnson should be here momentarily, I think.
One meeting she had, you know.
She's a devil.
Of course, she's available. Go see if you can get her. I guess, Representative, we're supposed to do this thing here. Okay. So away we go, huh? Especially with Tom standing there.
Yeah. And where did he get one?
And that's why Lindsay's here. So Lindsay's here.
So they went out to the mall or Kent's plan?
Well, I don't think they're in Kent's, but that's why we asked Lindsay to be here to talk about
okay.
how they prepare to have this.
How much time have they been told to get out? Well, that's reasonable. Can't wait.
It's about what we all have.
Dave, I want to hold off just for a second if we can. We've been decimated, as you can tell. And I want to see if we can get one more senator down here real quick. If not, I'm not as anxious as the chair is to proceed with a discussion of this magnitude with so many members absent.
Okay.
I hope he understands, but we've got people here who are new to the process and others that aren't. But I believe you need a fair hearing with enough people here to really vet this thing, okay?
Yeah, that's no problem.
And I just feel that only one or two of us are sitting here that's not really fair to you or fair to the process
okay.
to get this information back out. So I'm going to hold on just a second here. Okay. How long is the call of the House expected to last? Anybody know? I think it's Senate Bill 400 probably, I'm guessing. Are they voting it or are they debating it yet? Someone check for us.
I think Susan's checking
right now. Are they voting? Well, Dave, last time you were here, we had a lovely time killing the messenger. I'm sure you enjoyed yourself. I think that we'll say cooler heads will prevail this time. But
Senator Bates, it's quite all right. You have questions, and we should be able to answer your questions.
Well, not always. You can't answer questions when you're getting different directions back and forth.
They're voting.
They're voting right now. Why don't we just hold off a couple of minutes, because everyone will be back down here in 4 or 5 minutes. I think that'd make more sense. Is that okay?
That's quite all right.
All right with everybody? Let's do that. Let's just hold off.
You want her to do what?
Yeah, let's adjourn for a few minutes. Okay. We're adjourned.
Okay. Appreciate the opportunity to
let's
be here.
Recess. Do you want to bring us back into session?
Thanks.
We are back in.
That takes you back on?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you much.
Sorry.
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, I'm Dave Henderson, the legislative administrator, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to respond to some questions that were raised last week about the Wings renovation project. We did invite Lindsay Ball, the director of the Department of Administrative Services, to be here this morning to respond to any questions you might have about the relocation of the statewide office holders who currently reside in the Capitol. He has joined us. We did deliver to the governor, the secretary of state, and the treasurer notice on Friday that their leases, at this point, we will not be extending their leases. We are required under the lease.
Senator Thompson.
I guess I'm sorry to just pounce on this right out of the chute, but somehow delivering notice that your lease isn't going to get renewed just doesn't strike me as part of a collaborative process to talk about a major undertaking in this building. I need to be reassured, Dave, that it wasn't just we slipped the notice of non-renewal under the door. Is there some plan where they're going to go? Has there been some consultation with those constitutional officers? I just hate the notion that we as the landlords just dumped out three main offices in this building. So that's what I'm looking for.
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, those discussions started with DAS. Actually, the discussion started with the statewide office holders in September of last year, that there was a likelihood that their leases would not be renewed. DAS was, we met with DAS, I believe it was in December, to talk with them about beginning the process of identifying alternative space to relocate those offices into. The notices that we have delivered did leave us the opportunity, should the project not move forward, to allow them to remain in the building.
Mr. Chair, can we, with the chair's indulgence, could we have Mr. Ball come up here? Because it's not good enough to just give them notice. I'd like to know there's a plan for where they're going to go. And I will tell you that in this same room, having the Secretary of State and the Treasurer appear before us, and both of them were queried about what they knew about the plans, and it was precious little considering they're going to be moving offices. And I don't know what you plan to do about the ancillary costs or just the mechanical flow of mail and the rest of that. I'm told to relocate a business, including printing stationery and changing phone numbers and all the rest of that, can sometimes, depending on the size of the building, approach $1 million cost. Has anybody talked about that? It isn't good enough to just slide the envelope under the door.
Mr. Chair, I misspoke to you earlier about calmer and cooler heads. I took that back.
I thought you were reaching in your pocket for a rabies shot.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bates.
You know, I'm echoing some what she's saying. It was really amazing to me when we started this process. The Secretary came in wanting a new place to do business. Secretary of State didn't say anything about it at all. No discussion at all when he was talking about his budget about moving. And the governor's office the same way. And then I hear about notices being handed out. It strikes me just sort of ludicrous as sort of a joke and a very interesting one, though. And so I'd like to hear what your response to all this is.
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, my name is Lindsey Ball. I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Administrative Services. What Mr. Henderson explained is that the three elected officials in the building, the governor, secretary of state, secretary of treasurer, have been notified that their lease agreement will expire. We are now currently looking for space within the executive branch where we can find housing for those staff people, as well as continuing to look at the impact with respect to space and displaced staff. So you can appreciate the situation. We've added all of the current space that is occupied by staff that will be moved out. We've also, since that time, received word from the governor that he will vacate his office and go with his staff. We've also been advised that the Secretary of Treasury will vacate his office and go with his staff. So that will be added space that we have yet to determine the total amount. We have not had a conversation with Secretary of State yet to see if he will vacate all of the office that he currently occupies or not, but Secretary Treasurer and the Governor will. So the space we're going to be looking for is now a little bit bigger than what we first anticipated when we received notice that the offices would, staff in those two offices would be moved. So to give you a very specific answer as to where we would move them and the total amount of space needed and number of affected staff, I can't tell you that at this time. We haven't had enough time to work out the details.
Mr. Chair? Representative Cromwell? Kind of in a follow-up to this, I appreciate the fact that this is a business sort of a deal and taking a very business approach to it. But is this a temporary move for a while, the building renovation and reconstruction and everything is going on, or is this being looked at as being a permanent move? I would imagine probably with the exception of the governor's ceremonial office, which I would assume is going to still be there. Can you enlighten us a little bit on that?
Chair Jensen, Representative Cremel, a final decision has not been made about whether the statewide office holders would come back into the building, but the discussions that have taken place in this committee relate to the need for additional staffing for legislative offices. So at this point, it would be our anticipation that legislative offices would probably ultimately fill those spaces that right now the statewide office holders are in. You had a second question. We will maintain the governor's ceremonial office,
And our offer to the Secretary of State and the Treasurer is that each of them would maintain a ceremonial office here in the Capitol. If they choose not to do that, we certainly would use that space for legislative offices during the renovation process, and we would have to make the decisions down the road as to what the long-term planning would be for that space.
So the Treasurer and the Secretary of State are making choices in this process as well as to whether or not they want to maintain some kind of office presence in the Capitol and the governor, or am I hearing that correctly?
Chair Jensen, Representative Krummel, this is the first that I had heard that the Treasurer and Secretary of State are opting to move out with their staff. But again, if they wish to maintain the ceremonial office space that we have designated for them, we will maintain that space for them.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
This brings me back to my fundamental problem with this whole deal. Who is in charge? This is the first time that you've heard that they're moving out? I mean, the lack of communication in this whole... You just said it. This is the first time I've heard that they're moving out with their staffs. The lack of communication in this whole thing is just jaw-dropping to me. And I don't know ultimately who's in charge.
Chair Jensen, Representative Johnson, the Legislative Administration Committee controls the space in the state capitol and does all of the work relating to maintenance and operations of the state capitol. That has been the case since about 1973. The statewide office holders have been here on a lease basis that entire time, and we work with them very closely to operate their space, maintain their space to the extent that we can.
Mr. Chair, again, this underlies another problem. What you revert to, Mr. Henderson, is always, this is how it is, these are the rules. We're talking about what could be, depending on whose numbers you take and the extent of the renovation, maybe as much as $100 million undertaking. I would like some evidence that there is communication, collaboration, cooperation, that we're doing this together as expeditiously and efficiently as possible. I understand the legislature's responsibility with respect to this building and that it is not Lindsey Vol's problem or his shop that's responsible for it. But I keep seeing these very bright lines drawn about what is somebody's responsibility. I still don't know who the project manager is. I don't see the team. I don't see the coordination. And I keep getting this pushback about this is our building, and I understand that. But I don't see a kind of cooperative communication that gets us to a place where everybody's needs are serviced during a major renovation of this building that will impact folks that are Mr. Ball's responsibility.
Do you want to end at this point, Senator Bates?
I think she wants an answer to her question first.
I recognize
you. Jump in next.
Okay.
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, ultimately, the legislative administrator will be responsible for this project. We have internally in our facility services office a certified project management professional who will be the day-to-day manager of the project. We have contracted right now with Fortis Construction Company to provide the construction, to actually prepare for the construction, and it would be our intention to contract with them to actually do the project. We have also had very initial discussions with Darwin Doss, who was the original project architect for this project, as well as virtually every other project that we've done in the building for the last 25 years, for him to serve as a consultant to represent the owner in the process, so that if there are any issues that arise that need to be resolved between the owner, which is the Legislative Assembly and the citizens of the state, and the contractor, we'll have somebody who's got 25 years of experience in the building who would be our representative in those discussions.
Okay. Senator Bates.
Mr. Chair, a couple comments to the question. Before Senator Johnson and I started jockeying for the governor's office for our new personal offices, I think we need to step back and take a look at things. Yeah, I think you've got two basic problems. One, you need to do renovation from a structural basis. On a safety basis. I have a hard time seeing how you can make decisions about what that's going to look like. Not so much for wiring and plumbing, but I mean what those offices in both wings are going to look like without knowing what your needs inside the building are for LFO, LC, any other ones who want to stay in the building and should stay in the building with us, because that's the way things work best, isn't it? They're the same building with us. You have to get those needs and a prediction of those needs for the next 50 years down, so you know what kind of space you need in this building. You may find that you need every square foot in this building right now. The way out available should be all legislative and for legislative function. If you find that to be the case, you need to have a bigger discussion with the governor's office, Secretary of State's office, Secretary of Treasury's office, of where they want to be, where they need to be. They have offices that transcend just being a place you get some work done. Those are offices that have to look a certain way, presented a certain way to the public, and we can't lose that. Whether the ceremony office is here or in their new building, if that's what's needed, is a question that has to be answered. And maybe it's best that they're completely out of this building. Maybe it's best that for ceremonial purposes, they still remain in the building. But those are questions that have to be answered, and I just feel like you got the cart before the horse. The need for refurbishment before we have a breakdown of wiring or a breakdown of plumbing or we have a fire or damage of some type, I understand. But it seems to me that what this whole discussion we've had over the last few weeks is that, one, you've not got clear direction from the legislature of what needs to be done. It's been stop, start, stop, start, stop, start. And two, there's been no pushback to the legislature saying, we need a clear plan of where we're going to be in 50 years. We need to make plans now. We're going to drop that kind of money into a process. We need to make sure that what we're doing is what we need to do. Stepwise process, that we're going to be building another building out here, that we're going to have some improvements to the capital that are really significant. We know it's a long-term project. We know there's a lot of money involved. One of the things we've been talking about behind the scenes, sort of amongst ourselves, is should we dedicate some money for this, put it in a fund, and hold it till February while some real long-term planning goes on and a solid plan comes back. One that says, hey, this is where we're going as far as the statewide office is concerned. This is what this building should look like in 50 years. And the first step to doing that now is changing the wings the way we're talking about it. And that wings renovation should not just be a matter of plaster and mortar and bricks. It should be a matter also of making that functional. And to do that, you've got to talk to people who work in those wings. I know exactly what their needs are as far as space is concerned, how offices are separated, what kind of conference rooms you do or don't need. And conference rooms be in the center of the building, not out in the wings. There's multiple questions to be asked about that. And they haven't been asked, and they haven't been answered yet. So my question to you is, do you feel comfortable with everyone taking a deep breath here, knowing we got to come back in February, and during the interim, put a group together, a real serious work group, for some long-term and short-term planning to get us where we need to go?
Chair Jensen, Senator Bates, first of all, I need to correct something. When this project started in 1999 and 2000, we met with the legislative leadership at that time, and by that I mean the presiding officers and the four caucus offices. There was a stakeholder group that was assembled at that time that we had representatives from those six offices. We had representatives from the Chief Clerk, Secretary of the Senate, Fiscal Council, Revenue. We have consulted with all of those offices throughout this process to identify where conference rooms should be located, how the staff work in their space, the decisions that have been made as far as the configurations of the offices were made by representatives of the caucus offices who were designated to represent the interests of all 90 members. So I would say that we have had input from the members via the caucus offices, President, Speaker, Chief Clerk, Secretary, on the design of the space as it exists right now, as the design plans exist right now. If it is the decision of the body as a whole that we should delay this until February and work on the kind of issues that you feel need to be addressed, by all means, we can do that. We can't complete construction prior to the start of the 2009 session, which has been the goal, I believe, that came out of the public commission, some of the folks who've been involved have been wanting us to do that. If we proceed with the plan as it exists now, we can complete that construction. If we hold off and work on the long-range planning, we certainly could come back in February and present that and then start construction at some point later, whether that would be following the 2009 session or whatever was the desire of the assembly at the time in February.
Thank you.
Members, we're going to carry this over for tomorrow. We're run out of time, and my apologies to the agency and persons involved with the two important topics. We've run out of time. I know that my colleagues on the left are anxiously waiting in their vote because we've got a list that's about two arms long. And so with that, we are adjourned.